Chapter 4. In the Hall of the Lord of Ultramar. Never stand between a predator and its quarry, or between a king and his throne. Proverb from Illyrium. No one kneels here, Gilliman said, as he strode into the audience hall, but everyone was already bowed. The hall was vast, ornately wrought in silver and gold, the soaring roof supported by 1,000 columns with petal capitals. Across the broad floor of black and white mosaic tiles, hundreds of visitors knelt and bowed their heads. Nearly 2/3 of them were Space Marines of the Legions. No one bows here, Gilliman said. You are come to Macragge, and you are welcome here. Let me greet you. Flanked by the imposing cataphracti terminators of his Invictus bodyguard, Gilliman approached the nearest group. He raised the leader up, his hands clasping the warrior's shoulders. Name yourself, he said.
Verano Ebb, Captain. Silent Squad, Raven Guard, the man replied.
Your loss is my loss, Captain, said Gilliman.
And your hope is my hope, Ebb replied. I pledge my force to you, Lord. I ask nothing but the opportunity to stand with Ultramar and kill murderers.
And I'd ask nothing else of you. Your place is here, Verano. Welcome.
Verano nodded a half bow and gestured to the squads nearby.
Sardan Karashison, Iron Hands, and all of his kinsmen that could be rallied. Beside him, Zaitos of the Salamanders and his brothers.
Gilliman regarded them.
Do you pledge as Verano pledges? He asked.
Karashison was a flesh-spare creature in proud black and white plate. He had left his visor in place, undoubtedly because he had little organic face left beneath it. The visor was his face. The lenses of his helm slits glittered red.
I am Lord, he replied. I will stand with any who stand against Horus.
Zaitos had unclamped the helm of his green armour and stood with it under his left arm. His skin was almost as dark as the black finish of Karashison's livery. His eyes shone unnaturally brightly as the photo-enhanced lenses of the Iron Hands warrior.
We mourn the loss of our brothers, the Iron Hands, and the Raven Guard, he said in a gentle, accented voice, and we are bowed and blooded. But the 18th Legion Salamanders are not in mourning. We have resolved to remain steadfast and to trust that our Primarch, your brother, has survived. Until we see proof, we will not mourn.
Is this false hope, Zaitos? Gilliman asked.
It is pragmatism, Lord.
It might be argued that the pragmatic approach would be to accept the worst and move on. Hope can be a burden.
Hope can be a weapon, too, said the salamander. Just because we will not mourn, it does not follow that we will not fight. We will pledge to you and make war at your side, and our fighting shout will be, Vulcan lives. Your word is our command, my lord, until the day our battle cry is proven true.
Gilliman moved on to the next group. A huddle of battered imperial fists, led by a hulking giant. The man had been mauled by war and had refused all except the most basic medical stabilization. One arm was truncated and looked as though it had been gnawed off.
Alexis Pollux, he began, captain of the 405th Company and...
I know you, Alexis, said Gilliman.
I'm flattered, my lord. I was not sure you would remember.
I make a point of remembering all the officers my brothers regard as exceptional. I have read your report, the engagement in the Fal system.
It was a bloody matter, Lord.
You displayed brilliant strategic thinking. The Iron Warriors had you outnumbered and outgunned.
Pollux made no reply.
You escaped in a captured ship, the Contrador?
It was not an escape. It was an exit, Lord.
Pollock said. Our Primarch had signalled our immediate return to Terra. We do not disobey orders.
despite the losses you were forced to suffer by disengaging.
I regret the losses, Pollock said. More than that, I regret not finishing the job. My retribution fleet had him, Lord. We were close to killing the bastard.
There was silence in the hall. Traitor or not, no one was yet used to hearing one of the Emperor's sons referred to with such disdain.
Perturabo is my brother, said Gilliman.
Apologies, my lord, said Pollux. I did not mean...
He is also a thrice-damned bastard, said Gilliman. Do not guard your words on my account. Alexis, I would have you do two things. First, accept the medical provision we can offer you here, so that you may be restored and renewed. Second, thus restored, stand with me and finish the job you started at Fal.
Pollux hesitated, then nodded.
I accept both, my lord, he said, but conditionally. I have orders to return to Terra, and I will not disobey them.
There is no route to Terra now, said Gilliman.
Terra may no longer exist.
You think the throne world has fallen? Asked Pollux. I am sure it is the War Master's primary target.
Then all the more reason why we should rally, rearm, and move en masse to Terra, Pollux declared.
How long were you lost in the storm after Fal, Alexis? Gilliman asked.
I am telling you, there is no route to Terra. There is only one light in the darkness. We have no choice but to fortify and consolidate here. Besides, I feel I have the authority to countermand your orders.
How so? Asked Pollux.
Alexis, said Gilliman, I have seniority. Until someone arrives who outranks me, I have command. I intend to use it. We must save the Imperium. Speculation and indecision are not useful traits at this time.
Pollux glared at the Lord of Ultramar. He was one of the few space marines who even remotely matched the Primarch's physical scale.
What have you done here, Lord? He asked. What are you doing here?
I am securing the 500 worlds, Alexis, Gilliman replied. I am anchoring what remains of the Imperium on Macragge. We have a beacon, some security of transit, and the possibility of proper recomposition. For all intents and purposes, this is the Imperium.
Which makes you what? Asked Pollux. Our Emperor?
I do not presume to inherit anything, said Gilliman, recoiling very slightly. Like Zaitos, I will wait for proof of life before I take any drastic measures. But if my father is dead, and I am the last loyal Primarch alive, then yes, I am the Imperium.
If those are the circumstances, I will follow you, said Pollux, but I caution you that until we know...
You are familiar, I'm sure, said Gilliman, with the Ultramarines' concepts of theoretical and practical.
Yes, Lord.
Everything is theoretical, Alexis. The rest of the Imperium, the security of Terra, the survival of my father. Macragge is the only practical. It's the only thing we know we have, and at such a time of extremity, it's the only foundation I know we can depend on.
Alexis Pollux looked as though he had much more to say on the subject. He held Gilliman's gaze and nodded.
Practical solutions are what matter now, he said. Fix me, and I will fight at your command. I will fight at the very least to learn more of what is practical.
Thank you, Alexis, said Gilliman. I welcome whatever expertise you and your brothers can offer in the matter of improved fortification and defence. The Imperial Fists have long been renowned for...
He stopped. He had become aware of the quiet, steady scrape of a whetstone against a blade. Nearby, another Iron Hands officer waited with his men and a formation of white scars for their opportunity to greet the Primarch. Gilliman clapped Pollux reassuringly on his sound shoulder and moved towards them. They seemed to be the origin of the scraping sound.
"Eren Cleave of the Iron Hands," said Cleave, bowing.
He and his men were shrouded from head to foot in black cloaks. Now they had returned to real space. Their mourning had begun.
"I am Gantulga," said the White Scars leader, with more of a snap of the head than a bow.
He had a sword drawn and gleaming in his left hand.
"Welcome both," said Gilliman, clasping Cleve's hands. "Accept my offer of shelter from the storm. I hear you were several ships together, Cleve."
"A White Scar strike force and my own barge, Lord," answered Cleve. "Most of us made it through the turmoil in formation. Two vessels were lost."
"You come to me with blade drawn?" Gilliman asked the White Scar.
"Yes, but with my other hand open," said Gantulga, offering it to Gilliman. "We did not know what was in your light, Lord of Ultramar, so I kept one palm empty and a sword in the other."
"What do you think of the light now?" Gilliman asked.
"I like it well enough," said Gantulga. "It is not the trap I feared, but I marked your words to the Imperial Fist. The actions of Horus."
He said the name like a snake hiss, as if it burned his mouth and he wanted to spit it out.
"The actions of Horus are treachery, Lord of Ultramar."
"Heresy, I would say," said Gilliman. "It was treachery at first, to turn against brothers, to kill for personal advancement and power. But we have seen them, seen how their minds and bodies have been corrupted. Their very belief systems have been warped. This is no longer Horus's treachery. It is his heresy."
Gantulga nodded.
"Heresy comes in many forms," he said. "It can be blatant, like the one which now tears down the stars, but it can be subtle too, accidental. To make example, the building of a new imperium when the old one is not yet pronounced dead."
Gilliman's smile was as bright and sharp as the White Scar's blade.
"I am not building my own imperium, Gantulga. I am preserving what's left of the original."
With his free hand, the White Scar stroked his long moustaches thoughtfully.
"Then I would make sure of your purpose, Lord of Ultramar," he said.
He sheathed his sword.
"With that blade drawn," said Gilliman, "I thought you Scars were preparing impatiently for war."
They could still hear the scraping of the whetstone. It was coming from behind their group.
"No, Lord," said Cleve. "That would be the wolves."
The men with Cleve and Gantulga stood aside, and the pack of space wolves was revealed. They crouched rather than bowed or knelt, hunched and huddled in their armour and pelts upon the black and white paving. One was sharpening his war axe with long, steady strokes of the honing flat. All of them had removed their helms, but they still wore their tight leatherwork hoods and masks, fright masks, curled in perpetual snarls, worked with figures and spirals. Their eyes shone yellow.
"Fenris Hjolder," said Gilliman, "you are far from home."
Their leader rose out of his squat, unwrapping the fur cloak he had gathered around his forearms and allowing it to fall loose.
"Not your home, Jarl Gilliman," he said.
"Let me know you," said Gilliman.
"Fafnir Bloodbroder," said the wolf, "and my pack."
10 of you. A squad.
"A pack. In fealty to Sesk Company of the rout of the Vilka Fenrika."
Gilliman glanced at the warrior sharpening the axe. Apart from Fafnir, none of the wolves had risen or shown any deference.
"That axe looks sharp enough to me, brother," said Gilliman.
"No axe can ever be too sharp,"
the man replied without looking up.
"Bo Sorin," Fafnir growled, "ask forgiveness for your tongue."
The wolf looked up at Gilliman. He bared his teeth.
"I recognize my failing and will be sure to correct it," he said.
Fafnir looked at Gilliman.
"Bo Sorin can be insolent," he said, unapologetically.
"Bo Sorin is a space wolf," said Gilliman.
"You make a good point, Jarl," said Fafnir.
"Of all today's visitors, you intrigue me most."
"Are we not welcome to your hall, Jarl Gilliman?"
asked another of the men.
"Hush your noise, Herrick," said Fafner.
Biter Herrick let out a low, bubbling growl.
"You are all welcome to my hall, Fafner Bloodbrunner. What intrigues me is that everyone else sought a safe haven. From the flight data of your vessel, I see that McCrag was your intended destination."
"It was."
"We rode out the storm to get here," said Biter Herrick.
"We have a duty here," added Bo Sorin.
"A duty?" echoed Gilliman.
"Bo Sorin has a big mouth," growled Fafner.
"Necessarily, for he has a great many teeth to fit into it," said Gilliman. "What is your duty, pack leader?"
"Our duty is what our duty has always been, to do what others will not, to do the unthinkable, if the unthinkable must be thought."
"Your reputation as the Sanction is well known," said Gilliman, "and perhaps undeserved. We all serve according to our courage."
"Wolves serve beyond that. We are the executioner's sons."
"Who have you come to execute, Fafner Bloodbrunner?"
Fafner hesitated. He reached under his pelt and produced a sheaf of parchment.
"I see no point hiding it," he said, holding the document out. "Read for yourself, Jarl Gilliman."
"No. Tell me in your own words."
Fafner kept the parchment extended.
"Look at it, at least. See the seal of the Wolf King, and beside it the sigil of Malkador. Know where this instruction comes from, and the authority it contains."
Gilliman took the document, unfolded it, and studied the marks.
"Authenticate it if you must," said Fafner.
"I don't have to. This is real."
"You heard the fate that befell Prospero?"
asked the pack leader.
"The wolves were unleashed to issue sanction to Magnus."
"Yes, not so undeserved a reputation after all, eh?"
"Go on."
Fafner paused. In the eye slots of his straked and knotted leather hood, his golden eyes blinked once, twice.
"If one can fall, more can fall. More have fallen. Half have fallen. It has been decreed that a company of wolves be sent to the hearth side of every one of the Emperor's sons to watch them."
"For what?" asked Gilliman.
"For signs of treachery, of heresy."
"And if such signs become visible?"
"Then we are to act."
"Act?" asked Gilliman. "You're saying that you are here to watch me? To shadow me? And if you perceive my actions to be in any way untoward, what? You are authorized to enact sanction?"
"By the sigillite, so authorized."
Gilliman laughed. "You would cut my thread?"
"If needs be. Primarchs are not invincible. Some already sleep upon the red snow."
Gilliman raised his hand, indicating that his bodyguard should back down. The cataphracti had cycled up their weapons at Fafner's last response.
"Fafner, Bloodbrunner," said Gilliman, "do you really think that your pack could take me down?"
Fafner shrugged.
"Perhaps not. You are Jarl Gilliman, and your prowess is the stuff of saga. But we have our duty, and we would try. If you were, say, without your bodyguard, and cornered in a room with us..."
"My dear Fafner, then you would be cornered in a room with me."
Fafner shrugged again.
"We are the executioner's sons, Jarl. Even if you took us all, I doubt you'd leave the room whole."
Gilliman glanced at a nearby adjutant.
"Find them somewhere to sleep."
"Your hearth will do," said Fafner.
"Then show them to my hearth," said Gilliman.
The light of the Pharos, the distant xenotech of Sotha, illuminated Macragge as a lone, bright beacon in the encompassing dark, and that day it brought one other visitor to the heart of Ultramar. Not a storm-lost ship, or a bedraggled convoy, not a broken battle barge or a cargo boat of refugees. Not a vessel at all. It brought a flash high in the warp-dappled skies above Macragge Civitas, a flash, and then an object falling like a stone, streaking out a tail of fire as it scored through the atmosphere. Gilliman left his guests behind, walking back to the door of the audience hall with his Invictus guard at his heels and Yutun at his side. Titus Prato was waiting for him.
"The wolves aren't lying," Prato said.
"I didn't think they were," said Gilliman.
"Should I," Prato began,
"watch them, Titus? Guard the guard dogs?"
"I urge caution, my lord," said Prato. "The wolves are mercurial beasts at the best of times, unpredictable and quick to find their temper. It is their asset in battle, but it is not suited to the realm of the court. They are tired, and they have endured much. They are living on their nerve ends. I read this in them."
"You don't need to have the sight to read it," muttered Yutun,
casting a disapproving glance over her shoulder in the direction of the Fenrisian huddle.
"And they reek like..."
"Enough, Yutun," said Gilliman. "Fafner seems an honest man, straightforward. He made no attempt to hide his duty or the egregious burden of it."
"Nonetheless, I urge caution, my lord," said Prato, "precisely because of that. He is like an open book. He is determined to perform his duty, even though he knows it is a thankless task. He does not want to make an error. He is aware that the best of us have made many errors so far, not seeing the truth behind the traitor's masks before it is too late, expecting the best because we trust they are our brothers. At Istvan, at Kalth."
"I understand, Titus."
"No, my lord, you do not. It means that honest Fafner is too determined not to fail. He will jump at the slightest thing, the merest doubt. He will err on the side of caution, because the alternative failure is too grim to bear. He and his men are a risk to you, because they would rather strike at you in error than allow the slightest possibility of your disloyalty."
"I have nothing to hide," Gilliman said.
"Do you not?" asked Prato boldly. "What about me? What about the Librarius? We have learned that the wolves were unleashed on Prospero because your brother defied the Edict of Nicaea. You do the same. Fafner is looking for the slightest sign, the slightest sign. And I am it. I am proof of your heresy, lord. I am evidence of precisely the wretched warp-craft they have been told to hunt for."
"Your counsel is noted," said Gilliman. He looked back at the wolves one last time. "I think I can handle them. Teach them to come to heel, perhaps. That's why I want them where I can see them."
"You take liberties with your own safety, lord," murmured Yutun.
"Not now, Yutun."
"You are everything, my lord, and you cannot be everything. The only Primarch, the only son, the only loyal son we know yet lives."
Yutun began to count the rolls off on her fingertips.
"You are lord of Ultramar, king of this world, master of the 500, commander of the 13th Legion Ultramarines, last champion of the Imperium. You are also the Emperor's proxy and protector of the throne. Like the word or not, you will be a regent. You are his surrogate and possibly his heir. You may indeed, by default, be Emperor already."
"Mademoiselle..."
"I will have my say, Lord of Macragge," the old woman protested. "You cannot be all of these things. You are too valuable to risk. Let others command the forces. Let the Tetrarchs do that. Let others do the dirty work.
delegate, formally appoint commanders from the forces you are assembling. As a figurehead alone, you are too important. If fate overcomes you, the Imperium is most surely done.
Gilliman looked at Prato. Tell Mamselle Euton what I am thinking, Prato, he said.
My lord is thinking that he does not wish to call himself regent. If he is building what amounts to a new imperium, it would be unseemly to place himself on the throne.
Euton snorted.
Tell my beloved lord that he may yet have to, if there is no other heir.
That would make me no more loyal than Horus Lupercal, said Gilliman. I will not countenance it.
He saw that Prato was looking at him.
What, Titus? Something else?
Prato hesitated.
No, my lord.
Figures approached through the broad hall doorway, flanked by ultramarines in artificer plate. Valentus Dolor approached. Dolor was one of the four tetrarchs of Ultramar, the four princes who ruled the master worlds of the fiefdoms that made up the realm, and whose rank was second only to Gilliman's. Dolor's fiefdom was Occluda. He was a giant, and his master-crafted, modified Mark III plate was painted in the ultramarine's livery, reversed, blue for white and white for blue.
Valentus, said Gilliman, present me with good news and save me from my chamberlain's relentless nagging.
Dolor looked down at the slender old woman.
My good and distinguished friend, Mamselle Euton, is very small, lord, he said. I do not know how she could ever be very bothersome.
Flies are small, Euton snapped. Ticks, they are also small.
Ticks get plucked out and squashed, said Gilliman. Flies are swatted. Your point, ma'am.
I find myself temporarily without one, lord, said Euton.
I do bring good news, lord, said Dolor. I knew you'd want it communicated directly. A ship has put in. The pitiful thing has limped all the way from Calf, carrying the wounded and the weary. A sergeant called Thiel is aboard and commends himself to your lordship.
Gilliman smiled.
Ain't Thiel? He made a practical choice to remain committed to the underworld war. It will be good to see him. Have him go to the residency so that we can talk in private. It's been a long time since he was so steadfast by my side at Calth. I will instruct him so, said Dolor, with a courteous head bow. Is something wrong, Brother Titus?
Prato had suddenly winced and steadied himself against the wall with one hand. With his other hand he clasped his forehead.
Something, he began.
There was a supersonic bang that shook the windows of the hall and made someone present cry out. Looking up through the tall panes, Gilliman saw a streak of fire stride down the sky. For a stricken moment he thought of Calth, of the Campanile, of missiles raining down. But this looked more like a meteorite, an object plunging through the atmosphere. Others in the hall had hurried to the windows to see.
A bad star, one of the wolves spat. An omen star.
A broom star, snarled another. Maleficarum.
The fireball was not large. Gilliman could see that. It fell straight down and disappeared behind the towers of the Civitas. There was no explosion, no sunburst of a warhead. Dolor was already checking a data slate.
Reports of an impact, my lord, in the labouring habs of the southern suburbs. Site is just north of the Octagon Fortress in Anomidim.
Take charge of this, Gilliman told him.
Find out what it was. Find out how in the name of the throne it passed through our orbital screen and detector grid. And someone check there aren't more of them incoming. At once, lord, said Dolor. Report to me directly when you have anything, Gilliman snapped.
He turned to look at the room. All eyes were on him, all the visitors, wolves, fists, hands, scars, salamanders.
Find them accommodation in the garrison, see to their needs, and begin to assign them duties, he said to Prato. Form them into companies, according to their strengths. Let us make an army.
He turned to leave.
I'll be in the residency, he said, his bodyguard made to follow him. Stand down, he said. I go to speak with an old friend.